As we mentioned, my talk is going to focus on the instrumentation suite. I've reversed the title a bit, so I'll talk about the science goals first, then some of the capabilities, and finally some of the synergies that we can achieve by using these instruments together, which is the whole idea, right? Joe touched on the overall science goals in general. I'm going to show some examples. For instance, magnetoconvective flows in the photosphere. One of the things we've noticed over the last decade really is that the magnetohydrodynamic simulations are getting far ahead of the observations. So here is a simulation, a fairly old one actually, by Matthias of a sunspot. And this is the current capability with the 1 meter class telescopes that you can see. We are not getting down to the resolution limit of the models at all. ATST will in fact address that. This is just showing cuts through actual spectral lines with the model and the observations. ATST will achieve this sort of resolution. Of course, the modelers will be ahead of us anyway by then, but it's always a race, and ATST is our attempt to catch up. This is a really nice movie showing the calcium H line, sort of the lower chromosphere from Hinode, a half meter telescope, but at 1.6 second cadence. So you can see that even at 1.6 seconds, you've got unresolved temporal flows here. So that's just a way of saying that if you're going to observe the lower chromosphere, and especially as you get up in the upper chromosphere where things move even faster, your cadences have to be sub-second. The only way you can do that is with having a very large light bucket, essentially. And a 4 meter telescope is that sort of large light bucket, allowing us to get sub-second cadences. We'll be running at 30 hertz frame rates in the VBI, for instance. So we'll be taking this movie at 30 frames a second with the ATST. Another key goal is to have flare diagnostics in the lower atmosphere. This is the famous December 13th flare, again from Hinode. And you can see these very structured, very interesting flare ribbons. This is a close-up. There's obviously a lot of structure in there. Again, this is a half-meter telescope with 8 times the resolution. We hope to be able to zoom into that and begin to resolve the very detailed structure of particle deposition in the lower atmosphere. Again, in the lower atmosphere, if we look for details of a surface dynamo, what we've really got to begin to understand is some of these later findings, like the tornado-like swirls in the atmosphere. This is the results of Sven Wiedermeyer-Bohm et al. In Nature, showing that these rotational vortex flows that are probably rooted in the turbulent flow of the photosphere are propagated all the way up through the upper atmosphere. And again, they're very fast, they're very small scale. They arguably are resolved at the 1 meter telescope level, but there's no doubt that we're going to see much more structure and be able to understand these flows much better if we're getting down to 25 kilometer resolution with the ATST. And as I said, moving up in the atmosphere, we're seeing a lot of vorticity as well lately. This is one of these coronal cavity flows that was captured by AIA, and you can see there's a lot of twist and a lot of propagating energy here going up into the corona. This is how we believe the energy is stored in these non-potential fields. It may be rooted in these vortex flows in the photosphere. We don't know that connection yet, and the ATST is the instrument that can make that connection between rotational flows in the photosphere and perhaps reaching up into the corona. And of course, working with other space instruments that will be available at the time, this is the kind of system that we will, that's much worse. Okay, this is the kind of system we will want to study and understand to get a hold on exactly what's happening in these large non-potential flux ropes in the corona. And this is just a quick Dopplergram showing that there's actually longitudinal flows in these systems as well. And of course, the whole point is to understand this sort of energy storage. Here's the non-potential magnetic field system. Eventually, we know they all erupt. And that's a key goal, is to understand how that energy gets stored in there and how it gets triggered for eruption. Right now, I should back up and say, what do we need to do this? We need to measure the magnetic field in the corona, obviously. Right now, this is about the best we can do. This is a 70-minute exposure at the high C instrument on Haleakala, right next to where we are building the ATST. So it's a pioneering measurement. It's a heroic measurement. It shows you that there's magnetic field signal you can get out of the corona, but it's a 70-minute exposure. Obviously, the movies I showed you before won't tolerate that kind of exposure time. You're going to have to get down into the 30-second to 1-minute levels to really make a difference. And this is the comp instrument on Mauna Loa we saw talked about in recent days. This is a simulation by Dove et al. Of linear polarization around one of these non-potential flux ropes. These are actual observations. So linear polarization is now possible through the comp instrument, but that's just linear. There's no Stokes V, we don't have the vector. And finally, in light of Cooper Down's excellent talk yesterday, one of the things that ATST will do that very few people have realized is be the best sun-grazing comet telescope in the world. Sun-grazers are interesting. However, nighttime telescopes can't look at them once they're this close to the sun. That's too close for a nighttime instrument to get to the sun. And so the only telescope available for sun-grazing instruments, sun-grazing comets, will be the ATST in the 4-meter class. I mean, right now we use the Dunn, for instance, to do some studies, but at 1 meter and a comet, you're really pushing the sensitivity. You can't get much signal to noise out of that. So that's exciting. I'm really excited about that kind of research. To review the instrumentation, Joe gave you the overview. I'm going to go into detail on each one a little bit here. This is the visible broadband imager, sort of our movie camera, that will make those very high speed, as you can see, very high resolution, 25 kilometer resolution on the sun, movies of the photosphere and the chromosphere. And it's going to be split into two systems, what we call the blue and the red. Each will have four filters in a wheel. And these are the wavelength ranges. So here's your calcium K and G band. Here we will have some of the higher, we'll have an H alpha, we'll have an H beta. As Joe mentioned, we already have taken delivery of the H beta filter for the ATST, the actual filter. Here's the line, here's the filter profile, here's the wavefront plot. It's an excellent filter, and here's what it does. And I had never really seen H-beta before. This is a fascinating movie. H-beta is sort of, in my mind, a cross between H-alpha and G-band. You've got a lot of photospheric bright point signal coming through, but you can also quite easily see the sort of super penumbral structure in the chromosphere. So I think H-beta is going to be a really interesting go-to line to sort of tie together motions in the lower chromosphere and upper photosphere to the sort of chromospheric motions we want to study going into the corona. We've also taken delivery of the calcium K filter. Here's the calcium K line. Here's the filter. Again, an excellent wavefront plot. And this is actual data from the Dunn of testing of this filter. And you can see here the input spectra and the actual filter. Image contrast 32%. So we're getting a very good contrast out of that filter as well. And finally, we're going to look at the VBI as a possible coronal imaging instrument. If you put a 789 iron 11 filter in the filter wheel, you may actually be able to take images like this using the occulter at the ATST. We will have an occulter that will block out most of the disk light when you want to do something like that. Moving along, the visible tunable filter is a tunable triple Fabry-Perot Edelon system. It's a derivative of the IBIS and TSOS Fabry-Perots and to some degree the CRISP Fabry-Perot system working now. It'll have a limited range from about 520 to 870, but there's a lot of lines in there. And the good thing about it is it's going to be an imaging instrument, again, with diffraction-limited resolution in that range. With a 4096 by 4096 baseline camera, you'll have about an arc-minute field of view, circular, and it's a spectral resolution of a respectable 200,000, 30 picometers. So you'll be able to do very detailed lined dynamic diagnostics with this instrument as well. And of course, what we're shooting for here is this sort of data. This was taken by the IBIS Fabry-Perot instrument at the Dunn Solar Telescope in H-alpha. This will be possible with the VTF, and this is from the CRISP instrument on La Palma. You can see there's, again, a lot of detail, a lot of flows that we're just beginning to see in these 1-meter class telescopes, and we'll delve into those greatly with the 4-meter telescope. As I mentioned, the VTF will do line sampling. This is I think the 5250 line, and this shows the kind of spectral resolution you'll be able to get, if you'd like, through the 5250 line. Each one of these vertical lines is a line sample with the filter. The baseline line sampling, however, will be a little coarser. For instance, you can do a 5-point line sample very quickly in this instrument and derive a 5-point Dopplergram, or if you polarimetrically modulate it, you can get a 5-point magnetogram in 3 seconds with 3-second cadence at 25 kilometer resolution. We will be requiring all instruments to have what we call standard observables. This means that when you go to use an ATST instrument, you'll know exactly what the standard observables are that are created by that instrument, Dopplergrams, magnetograms, filtergrams. You won't have to sort of work with it to create your own observables. These will be pre-known. They'll be easily calibrated. They'll be easily analyzed. We'll have software to do all of that. So if you stick with the standard observables, you'll be okay. You can, of course, because it's ground-based, do what you'd like and create your own observables, but then you're kind of on your own. And the VTF is really out in front on this. They've already defined a lot of their standard observables. For spectral polarimetry, for instance, you can get a Stokes V with 5 wavelength points, as I mentioned. You can take 8 images in 3 seconds and have that speckle reconstructed. So you have a total of 80 images with a signal-to-noise of 250. Those are the spectral polarimetric ones. This is the Dopplergram set. This is just the imaging set. You can see we're getting down to 4 milliseconds per image with the VTF there, so very, very high rate imaging. Moving along, we have the VISP, the Visible Spectropolarimeter Instrument, being constructed now at HAO. This is a multi-line spectropolarimeter with a huge wavelength range, a very good, again, spectral resolution, 2 arc-minute slits, and in about 10 seconds you can achieve 10 to the minus 3 sensitivity, and it'll have 3 simultaneous cameras running, so you can choose 3 spectral ranges, and you can, within those 3 spectral ranges, observe any lines in the solar spectrum you'd like. So not only can you explore your standard spectropolarimetry lines, you'll be able to choose new ones. This is really the spectropolarimetry exploration instrument for the ATST. And it's going to do things like this, where we've seen the SP on Hinode be very successful at the 6302 line. So we'll have I, Q, U, and V spectra coming out very quickly from this. But again, the Hinode instrument is limited to just the 6302 pair of lines. The VISP is going to give you anything from 380 to 900. The diffraction limited near IR spectropolarimeter, this is to address the question in the audience. We're getting up into the IR now. This is going to have a fiber optic integrated field unit. In other words, it's going to not be a slit spectrograph. And in fact, it's going to use a birefringent fiber optic image slicer so that you can actually preserve polarimetry while you have a small block of fiber optics making an image of your target, but then splitting that out spectrally at every pixel in that little image slicer. The wavelength range is 900 to 2.5 microns. High-res grading will give you 200,000. The fiber optic image slicer is necessarily small because it's really pushing the technology now. We hope to have larger ones later. But what that looks like is if you look at a prominence, for instance, you'll be doing something like this with your image slicer to create mosaics. At each spot, you're getting an image. At each pixel of that image, you're getting a full spectral profile. So you're doing spectropolarimetry at every pixel and creating mosaics very quickly across the prominence. And of course, what we'd like to do is measure vector magnetic fields above the limb. With this is sort of the state of the art taken at the DST in 2002 of a quiescent prominence. I should have probably gotten a TEMIS. They're doing this sort of thing at TEMIS right now, and it's a little higher signal to noise, perhaps a little bit more spatial resolution, but you get the idea. There's still a lot of structure we're missing here. To wrap up, okay, we've got the cryogenic near IR spectrometer. This is really a new instrument in solar physics because it's going far out into the IR, far for us anyway. It's really 1 to 5 microns. We haven't explored the solar spectrum or what the sun looks like very much in that range. It's got a moderate spectral resolution, but that's because you're in the IR. One thing to note that this instrument works independently of all other instruments. So if you're going to use the cryo, you have to give it all the light. You can't have other instruments splitting off of it. It doesn't work with the AO as well. And that's why it really only achieves its diffraction limit of 0.3 arc seconds out at 5 microns in good seeing. But it is a cryogenic instrument, and so we're going to, I think, see a lot of new structure in the upper atmosphere in particular. You can work with this in coronal mode or on the disk. And this is the sort of thing that, again, we're going to be aiming at. This is the comp instrument looking at the corona, and you can see here an intensity. This is a Dopplergram. This is linear polarization, and this is the line of sight magnetic field derived from this sort of data. This, again, is a long exposure time. You can see the signal to noise is pushing the limits here, but we believe the cryo instrument will do this on a regular basis with higher signal to noise and higher resolution. And Joe already showed this slide, but this is just to show that at our diffraction limit, which most of the instruments will achieve, we'll be pushing down into the 0.05 there, 0.02, I guess. And cryoners will be sort of set at 0.3 arc seconds, which will hit diffraction limit around 5 microns. Just a quick synergy talk. This is what the layout of that Coudé room looks like. That big rotating table that Joe showed will have all the instruments on it. It's very complicated, but you can see that they all fit. Here's VBI, DL-NERSP, VISP, VTF will go here. Wavefront correction system is here. And in order to do that, you have to be very careful on how you design your beam splitter. So this is one example of the beam splitter design that we're currently working with the science working group to define, because how you design this defines how you can work together with all these instruments to use them at the same time. So this is one example of a VISP, VBI blue, and VTF setup. Here's the light coming in this way from the deformable mirror splitting off to the wavefront sensor. Here we have a dichroic mirror sending everything less than 530 nanometers to the VISP and the VBI blue. The VISP is actually looking at everything above 440, so you can get G-band and calcium K here, 490 to 530 in the VISP, and then the VTF is taking everything less than 900 and getting its range. So you've got H-alpha, you've got helium-1D3, things like that. And you can have the DL NERSP, of course, is getting everything longwards of that, so you can have that working at anything in longwards of 1 micron, 10-830, for instance. This is just showing that split. And I will end, there's another diagram there, but it's basically the same. So I'll end here saying that you can think about doing things like on-disk spectropolarimetry with these sorts of combinations, or prominent spectropolarimetry. I keep coming back to that because it's my favorite, but I think the ATST is really going to be very powerful for off-limb spectropolarimetry. Thank you.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for that very nice overview. Just a small correction about the comp instrument. We do, in fact, measure circular polarization, which, of course, is how we get the line of sight magnetic field.
Yeah, I realized that at the end of the talk. That, wait a minute, they're getting the magnetic. So the Stokes V is there. But the main product is the linear on the web.
That's what we produce on a daily basis, because, as you correctly point out, you know, we, with the small aperture of comp, we need long exposure times to get a useful Stokes V.
Right. Thank you for that correction.
On the disk, looking down at the surface and photosphere, low chromosphere, what do you expect to be the weakest transverse fields you can see, at granular or subgranular resolution, 2 sigma above the noise?
Good question. And the answer is, I don't know. I'll have to get back to you with that, Ron. We have those numbers. I just don't have it on the top of my head.
Hey, Tom. Given the temporal resolution and the integration time, do you see any role of ATST in studying like transient phenomena in the corona, for example, MHD waves generated by eruptions?
I would certainly hope so. Yeah, we'll have to see what sort of sensitivity we can really achieve in the IR instruments, for instance, at 1 micron and above, which will be the main coronal study instruments. And if we get a good enough sensitivity, I hope to be around the 1 second. Cadence for some of the brighter features there, but that's sort of TBD. We're having a workshop this November to really nail those numbers down, so I can't give you good numbers on those yet.